I thought I was living a healthier lifestyle. I was working out very, very consistently. I was doing all the things, eating right, quote unquote, eating right, the way I thought I should be eating, taking supplements. I was working with a supplement company at the time, as well as, you know, going to grad school, living, quote unquote, the life. I had my own apartment, and I kept developing kind of this compounding physical health challenges. And it came to a point where I needed to seek some help because I couldn't really figure out what was going on.
Welcome to Thriving with Diabetes, the podcast where we empower people with type 2 diabetes to live their best lives. I am your host, Gamden, a holistic wellness coach, helping people overcome challenges related to type 2 diabetes. As a holistic wellness coach, I have dedicated my passion for health and wellness to helping people like you navigate the complexities of diabetes. I believe that with the correct knowledge, support, and mindset, you can manage your health condition more effectively and lead a fulfilling and vital life. In this episode of the Thriving with Diabetes podcast, we are talking about functional nutrition. We are honored to have a great guest with us today, Fallon Morningstar. Fallon is not only a certified functional nutrition practitioner, but also someone who has walked a challenging health path herself. Through this episode, you will gain profound insights into functional nutrition and practical strategies so you can combine them into your own diabetes journey. As you know that our podcast is about empowering people with type 2 diabetes to lead healthier and more fulfilling lives. Having experts like Fallon on our show helps us achieve that goal. It is always inspiring to learn about our guests' perspectives and experiences. And before we dive into our discussion, I would love from Fallon, Morningstar to introduce herself, share some background about her and what she does. So without further ado, I will hand it over to Fallon to introduce herself. Fallon, welcome to the Thriving with Diabetes podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here today. It's a pleasure. And to go into a little bit about myself, I feel like that's a huge rabbit hole sometimes. At 26 years old, and that was 4 years ago, I was having some challenges, physical health challenges. And at that time, I didn't really know what functional health or holistic health really was. I thought I was living a healthier lifestyle. I was working out very, very consistently. I was doing all the things, eating right, quote unquote, eating right, the way I thought I should be eating, taking supplements. I was working with a supplement company at the time, as well as, you know, going to grad school, living, quote unquote, the life. I had my own apartment, and I kept developing kind of this compounding physical health challenges. And it came to a point where I needed to seek some help because I couldn't really figure out what was going on. So I asked my family physician, I asked my gynecologist, and really portrayed what my symptoms were. And those being really, I felt wired and tired every single evening before going to bed. I was emotional eating. My menstrual cycle was irregular. Now, granted, I had just stopped taking the hormonal birth control pill. My What else? My muscles could not recover from the gym. It'd be 4 days, excuse me, after working out. And I would still feel like my leg workout having been impacted my legs. I'm like, this is not right. So that led me into functional health. And when I say functional health, that's really this integrative looking at the entire body as one complex system. It is not just the physical symptoms that we might be experiencing, but it's also taking a look at our emotional self and how that's playing into this cycle of chaos. And it's looking at how we're living our day to day. And sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow, right? Because when we're going through a very challenging time in our health, it can be very challenging to change because we are in this habitual pattern. So I knew that there was a lot of things that I needed to change in my health. And through some functional lab testing, that really opened my eyes up to be validated for my symptoms, showing a clear picture of this is a good direction that we can heal. And having those tests plus changing a lot of my lifestyle, I saw dramatic impacts. And that was when I said, I have to go ahead and take this functional health certification myself, because this is a career path that I would love to continue to explore. So that is a little bit about how I became a practitioner myself. I'm certainly not a doctor. I don't write prescriptions or anything like that. I am a holistic coach that has the ability to order these functional labs for clients as well as coach them in a holistic way.
Brilliant. Very interesting story. So your own health issues or symptoms led you to learn about functional nutrition and to figure out what was wrong. Even you were healthy or following healthy diet and doing exercise as well, but you were suffering from fatigue and emotional eating as well. So I can see what motivated you to become a functional nutrition practitioner, which is very interesting. It seems to me that the functional nutrition is the foundation of your approach to health, which involves understanding how the body's system interact and tackling the root causes of health issues. I know you already touched on functional nutrition, so if you can take a deep dive into what functional nutrition is and how it works, something like that.
Absolutely. So I'll start from what I thought nutrition was and lead into how the functional perspective is a little bit different. I think the way I thought things were, I am focusing on what calories I'm eating, what is going in my mouth, and I'm focusing on how many calories I'm burning throughout the day. That was my mindset of calories in versus calories out. When I was in the bodybuilding and powerlifting scene, I was focusing on having a good amount of protein from animals. I was focusing on carbohydrates and fats, and I think macronutrients, you know, the carbohydrates, proteins, and fats are very important. Those make up a majority of what we're taking in. However, I still had all of those physical health symptoms occurring. So taking a step deeper and looking at how that food is actually working in our body and how it's fueling ourselves, cells, it's a completely not completely different, but it's a much more in-depth process than just eating a piece of steak and broccoli and some coconut oil that's cooked in. It is almost looking at how intentional we are with that food. So where did that food actually come from? Are you going to, for example, the grocery stores around me, it's a large grocery store. Are you buying the processed steak that probably has extra hormones in it, that was not grass-fed, that was fed grains, etc. So looking at the quality of the meat, and this is just one example, you can look at the quality of your vegetables, looking at the quality of just your overall intake of things, going in a little bit deeper and saying, well, where did that come from? Because as we know, taking animals, for example, they have their own heartbeat, they have their own life, and they have their own stress hormones. So depending on how the animal lived, you know, when we have a excitatory occurrence that happens in our life, we have these stress hormones that get released. It is, and we feel kind of anxious, we feel overwhelmed. It is the same process in an animal. So you can imagine if these animals are in these compact areas, if they're fed these soy-filled, corn-filled, wheat-grained products, how their molecular structure in their own body is transformed, and then we are eating these things. And so it then gets incorporated into our molecular biology and how it gets processed in us. So it's a great opportunity for us to really, again, dive deeper and say, well, can I buy an organic product? Can I go to a farmer that I know is really trying to support the planet and not just looking for another financial support, right? We are looking for more of those quality. How can we enhance the quality of our food, which in turn enhances the quality of our life? So when we're eating, again, the steak that is from pasture raised, that was humanely butchered, for example, the amino acids in that food, the quality is enhancing our own mitochondria. It is working much better in our body because of the vibration that it has, if that makes sense. So it is about the quality in, absolutely. So to take a one step deeper, if we're intaking better quality foods, that is much less processed or much less herbicide-filled or pesticide-filled foods that our body doesn't have to worry about detoxing. The toxic load to our system is much less. Still, I don't think in this society today that we can fully get rid of all the toxins. It's just we live in a toxic world. But taking baby steps into a more holistic and more quality-filled life that is less toxic to ourselves, less that we have to worry about, less that we have to process. Our liver is constantly processing things. So if we think about supporting our liver, supporting our heart, like, yes, we are going to have a better quality of life. So that to say, I'm sure we have heard, you should buy organic products, you should buy these specific foods. And I think it's even more of a point to say why we should be buying these foods. And ultimately, it's either we are paying for our health up front, or 20, 30 years down the road, we're paying for it then. And in my perspective, my opinion, we should be taking full advantage of the opportunity that we have now to keep ourselves healthy. And that, in turn, our decisions change the trajectory of the whole collective as a whole. So your family and their decisions and the next generation. So it's ultimately like a great opportunity for us to be proactive in our health and choosing those better quality foods, knowing that it's never going to be perfect. And I say that because I have a tendency or a pattern to be like, it has to be this way, it has to be perfect. But no, it's just one baby step in the right direction, right? So I hope that that was a nice view of how choosing better quality foods impacts our digestion. We're better to assimilate nutrients better, which means more energy. Because how many of us go to the doctor feeling extremely fatigued, and we don't know really what's going on? We are having an extreme amount of mineral loss because of how stressed we are, of how much energy is going out. But I feel like that could be a whole nother rabbit hole. But yes, so I think just choosing better quality foods ultimately is going to help your cells function better, your digestion function better, your emotional being function better, less anxiety. So it ultimately does come down to how many times you were eating per day, the quality of your food, what your actual plate at each meal looks like. Are you just eating a banana? Are you eating a banana with some healthy saturated fats and a protein? So I think how each plate looks for you should be intentional. You shouldn't just follow this cookie cutter program of you need to focus on protein, fats, and carbs. It should really be what works for you. And I think that that takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of introspection to say, how is my energy after I have eaten this food? Does it feel sustained 3 hours from now? Do I have gas after I eat? Am I belching? Do I have some acid reflux? Do I have diarrhea? You know, this hypermotility going on. So it really takes we have to take our power into our own hands and be that introspective person. Like, if we are having these symptoms, I think the first place we need to look is what food we are eating.
Brilliant, brilliant. Very interesting information. Thank you for sharing these great insights. So we cannot treat all the food the same. This is the first key point. So you might have the same food group, but one can be healthy, the other one might not be. And you emphasize the quality of the food that we eat. You mentioned toxicity as well. Sometimes we might eat something and we think it's healthy or it's okay. Like you did yourself, then you discover that no, that was not the healthy lifestyle like we should focus. And you mentioned as well about the benefits of having organic foods, eating grass-fed meat, for example, instead of eating food that is full of chemicals or pesticides, something like that. This will lead us to the next point about functional nutrition. You know that when we talk about nutrition in diabetes, it is like a key point. Especially when we look at blood sugar levels. So understanding the relationship between diet and diabetes is fundamental. What are key dietary considerations for people with type 2 diabetes, and how can nutrition help stabilize blood sugar levels?
Yeah, I think this goes back to visually looking at your plate, evaluating how many times a day that you are eating. I think I have a couple family members that do have type 2 diabetes, and I am not around them often, but I hear stories of my grandmother telling me that they're like, yes, they would eat these pastries and then just inject insulin into their body. And I think that's a kind of a chaotic or maybe an appropriate way to look at how you can support yourself. I think because of a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, it really opens people's eyes up to be like, oh my gosh, I have this diagnosis. And I think some depend on the insulin too much to say, I can eat whatever I want. I'll just you know, take this pill, you know, the quote of, I'll just do this and everything will be fine. And I think over time, we are not these machines that we think we are. That really continues to degrade our cells. And it's not as simple as taking this insulin and everything's better. I think we really have to take a hard look at what foods we're actually eating. If you are going to consume a pastry, can you make a homemade pastry that doesn't have all of these processed sugars in it? Can you use a maple syrup or honey instead? Can you balance that meal with a protein source and a fat source so it slows down the need for this insulin? Because I believe that diabetes, type 2 diabetes, comes up because of the imbalance of our blood sugar levels, right? Mm. It's extremely wacky. So how can we stabilize those blood sugar levels? We need to make sure that we're having a balance of those macronutrients. And we need to time the frequency, because if, say, for example, we wake up at 8 a.m. and then we're not really eating until 11, we have had how many hours that we've been sleeping, that we've been, our body still functions 24/7, right? And we haven't had food all through the night, and then we're waiting an additional 3 hours to actually eat. And that can really impact our blood sugar levels, especially if you have type 2 diabetes. So I think the frequency of your meals can look a little bit different to somebody that does have sustained blood sugars, that does have a well-functioning liver and pancreas to be able to create that insulin, or to store our glucose and just excrete it when it's necessary. So the more that we can balance each plate, just focusing on one meal at a time, the more stabilized your blood sugar can be and the less you might need your actual insulin. But I think it can be even more intentional to that. Actually thinking about the food that is in front of you, not working through lunch, not watching TV or the scary movie or whatever during your eating time, because even the you can't particularly see this, but our nervous system is very objective. So when our eyes are open, the sense of the eyes, it is impacting our nervous system. And so if we're actually not thinking about the foods that we're eating, we are even more disconnected from our digestive system. So it's almost like we're not even able to properly digest our foods, because the intention isn't there. The presence of the beautiful, nutrient-rich food is not there. And I think that's extremely important, whether you have type 2 diabetes or not. The more intentional and the more present that we can be when we're eating, the more our cells are actually going to be able to assimilate these nutrients so they can work and function better, so we can have the energy that we're desiring and not have this icky or this heavy feeling in our gut after we eat. So I think not only looking at your frequency of meals, what's actually on your plate, but also thinking about your food. Because I know if I am thinking about the food that I'm making, I'm already starting to salivate in my mouth. And my digestive system has already started, because it knows we are going to intake food shortly, right? So these enzymes that we're able to activate with even thought is very important, to just have the ability for our body to break these foods down and to assimilate them.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing this information. Great that you mentioned we need to look at the ingredients, for example, when we cook food, because when you buy things or food from outside, you don't have control, or you don't know everything about what is what they put in the food itself. And the second thing you mentioned, healthy fats as well, to slow the digestions. And you mentioned as well the when we eat, we need to have a sort of present And they say digestion starts from the mouth. Is that right?
Yes, I completely believe that. Okay, yes.
Brilliant. And if we don't focus on what we eat, so we might just swallow without chewing the food.
Right. And I think, again, the more intentional that we can be, the more our body is like, oh, this is steak. This does have the amino acids that we need in it, because that can in turn break down into these polypeptides, and it can create our neurotransmitters, really supporting our mental health, not only our physical health and repairing some of our tissue, supporting our bones and calcium, but it also makes us feel more grounded, makes us feel more like a stable human being, rather than having these, for lack of a better term I can think of, these high anxiety or this overwhelm or these blow-up tantrums that we might experience. I think that is potentially from a lack in macronutrients and or mineral nutrients. So it does all kind of come together in this complex system, and I think it does take a lot of time. It takes patience to really get to know your system and what it does need. And I think with the functional lab tests, it really supports your body in bridging that connection back to yourself in a much quicker and more elegant way, rather than taking some guesses and really being frustrated when things don't go your way. So
brilliant. Thank you for adding that as well. Very important point. You just mentioned about insulin resistance, and you know that insulin resistance is a common issue in diabetes. I think people with type 2 diabetes should have some basic knowledge about it to improve their insulin sensitivity. Can you explain what insulin resistance is and what lifestyle factors contribute to insulin resistance?
Yeah, so think of insulin resistance as really your cells not being able to function optimally. We need to have glucose being able to get into the cell, which is like our mitochondria, for it to do its work, for it to have the energy to support your heartbeat, to support your liver detoxing, to support your gallbladder from releasing these bile salts so you can break down the fats. I think it all does come down to the cellular level of how we are able to cultivate energy, because everything is energy, right? So when we have this insulin resistance, we are not able to have the energy that our body needs. So we're not able to have these minerals to support us, to have our liver detoxify or have it help us break down the proteins so we can use them in an energy cultivating way. I think with insulin resistance, it's almost like we're just in this dysfunctional state. And I think how we get there is from the disproportionate eating patterns that maybe we learned from childhood. I think it is, for example, a lot of us have sedentary jobs and not in eating, for example, or overeating a particular meal, and then we're just sitting there because we had to go back to work, or we're sitting in and watching a movie, it's the end of the evening. We're not actually using this energy that we're taking in. It's like we're over-consuming things. And when we're not actually moving or discharging or putting to use the energy that we're taking in, it's almost like it's too much glucose, for example. It's too much of this sugar. So it's almost like there's an overpopulation of glucose, but there's not enough of need for it. So over time, our cells kind of become desensitized to the amount of glucose that we're taking in. So that it just becomes more and more and more of an imbalance. as we keep developing this patterned way of eating or this unintentional eating. So I think the window of the insulin resistance becomes even greater, which over time that could develop into type 2 diabetes. And so then you need to have this balance of insulin. But I think ultimately to come back into harmony, especially when you have type 2 diabetes, I can imagine it can feel quite overwhelming to just say, well, this is my diagnosis, this is how I'm going to live for the rest of my life. And I definitely want to encourage people that it doesn't have to be that way. It is just one meal at a time. It is one 15, 20-minute walk at a time for you to come back to yourself and not be so dependent on this insulin. Because I will say the body has such a beautiful innate ability to heal itself, but we just have to support it in the right ways. So a way to become more insulin sensitive is one meal at a time. It is having a balance of the proteins, fats, and carbs, because it's not going to just flip a switch right away where you're going to become this insulin sensitive person and you're going to be able to use all this energy and it's all going to be fine. I think how you got the diagnosis, it wasn't just one time. It has been your entire life of just not knowing how to properly eat or how to move. And so I hope that explanation really portrays how insulin works and how you need to get moving, really. Because even I know I catch myself doing this when I am very busy and on my way to somewhere and I didn't have a meal. I'm eating in my car sometimes, and that's not a sustainable way, but it's just having awareness of, okay, I need to be able to sit down, not worry about driving and eating at the same time, because that's not helping my blood sugar, right? So my blood sugar can become wacky, and over time, that's just a recipe for disaster, because I know in my family dynamic, there are some people that have type 2 diabetes. So I think just genetically, it could be a predisposition to myself getting that. But ultimately, I want to stress the lifestyle that we live is even more important.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for sharing that as well. Great that you mentioned beside food, sedentary lifestyle can also contribute to insulin resistance. And previously during this episode, you mentioned sleep, which is some people might call it the foundation of health. You mentioned as well about eating with, having intention while eating. You need to focus on what you eat. I think in our previous call, you mentioned something about emotional wellness, and some people may overlook wellness, emotional wellness in diabetes management, which is a very important aspect of health. How do emotional factors such as, stress, anxiety, and trauma impact blood sugar levels and overall health?
I think looking at the nervous system and how it can shift from one state to another. For example, it might be extremely calm and joyful and in this bliss state, while other times it can be in this very sympathetic, and it's almost like we are running away from something or we don't feel safe and we have this overwhelm that comes up. And another state being we are just completely in this freeze. We can't necessarily move. We feel very, very overwhelmed. It's kind of like we're a deer in the headlights. Our nervous system can shift from state to state. Food can definitely impact that, But if we are able to look at maybe how we have lived up to this point, or trauma that we may have experienced. Trauma doesn't necessarily have to be a car accident. It can be if we were bullied when we were in high school. It could be how we felt loved or not. You know, it can be as simple as that. That could be, trauma is such a big, big, broad term. I think every single human has trauma or can have a dysregulated nervous system. And that's just the nature of being human. You know, we are supposed to be shifting from state to state. And that's how, if we think about hunter-gatherers, right? We would eat with the family and then maybe go out and, you know, gather, you know, hunt some animals. So we were able to shift in our nervous system depending on what the need was. Well, I think from our environment today, there's a lot of being in the sympathetic state, having this heavy traffic on our way to work and getting cut off, or having an abusive relationship, or a family that's not supportive. Like, all of these things can shift us into this sympathetic state where we don't feel safe, we don't feel valued or worthy of what we're, what our desires are, or how we want to be loved. And that plays into potentially emotional eating. If we don't have the right coping strategies or know anything about what coping is or what boundaries are, I know my pattern is to eat to numb. A lot of my clients, it is, I am eating because I don't feel safe, so I'm going to try to numb these feelings because they feel quite intense right now. Or, and for example, if you do that, maybe you're particularly looking at sweets. And so imagine how that can impact our blood sugar levels. If you were continuously eating and not moving after that, or going to bed after that, you know, that over time really does dysregulate our nervous system and dysregulates our blood sugar to enhance the susceptibility to have type 2 diabetes down the road. So the emotional side is very important to know, or to even take a pause before you might feel called to eat those sweets. Like, is this an emotion coming up, or do I actually feel a need to eat those sweets? So I think the more that we can become educated on the experiential level of how to cope with life, of how to make ourselves feel safe, and safety can really be as simple as coming back into the present moment and realizing that you are sitting in this room, you are safe right here, right now, because I think the unsafe part looks at, am I going to be okay in the future, or is my financials going to be okay, or my health, or anything can make us feel unsafe in today's world, I feel like. So again, coming back to self and really being introspective is going to support your emotional health, which then supports your blood sugar levels. Because when we have this heightened sense of hypervigilance, it's like our cortisol is being bumped up. Our blood sugar is like, okay, we need to run away. We need to run from this tiger. We need to run from this relationship or this job. And so these stress hormones that we have are just pumping and pumping, and our blood sugar just gets dysregulated because we're not actually running from anything. It's almost like we're, right? So the more, and I don't mean to laugh, but we're not physically running from anything, even though our body is in this very objective state, it's thinking that, yes, mentally, we need to run. Exactly. So you can imagine how dysregulated the blood sugar can become. Right?
Thank you for sharing that. Very interesting information. And you just mentioned the first step we should take to overcome emotional challenges is to be aware of the issue that we have. This is a key point. I will take it from this episode regarding emotional wellness. You have already given us a lot of tips and strategies to improve our nutrition. And I wanted to ask you if there are some more tips about nutrition or maybe lifestyle changes that people with diabetes can implement.
Yes, I think being able to take that pause and focus on your breath is going to be important, because like I said before, you didn't get type 2 diabetes overnight. I think there's an underlying reasons why that came to be. And if you can have 5 minutes or 10 minutes twice a day to focus on your breath and really be present with yourself and accept yourself as you are right now, and know that that doesn't have to be a forever thing, I think that is very important to do every single day. And not only with the breath, from a biological perspective, think of supporting yourself not only in macronutrients, but also those micronutrients, those minerals that we might need even more of because of how our body is in this stressed out state right now. For example, magnesium burn rate. Magnesium is a mineral that I think all of us need to be supplementing with, because it is so impactful in how our body cultivates energy. There are over 3,700 enzymatic functions in our body that are magnesium dependent, and there is no way, shape, or form that we are getting enough in our food. And when we are stressed, we need even more because we're burning through it more. So having a diagnosis of any kind definitely means there is an impact or a very drastic imbalance in our minerals. So I would say focusing on getting more minerals in your diet is going to be quite important too. And you could start with just simply adding trace mineral drops in your water, starting very like 5 drops in a glass of water and building up to a good dose that works for you. And I would definitely suggest having a filtered water, not a city, standard city water or a well water. I would work to get maybe a reverse osmosis kind of water, then adding those mineral drops into that to just start to support your body with more minerals. Because the more minerals we have, the more regulated we can be and really grounded we can become. And that does support our blood sugar levels. So to summarize that, I would say focus on breath, focus on more minerals.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. Just another question before we move to the final part of this episode. What are your top maybe 3 or 4 or 5 food supplements that you would like to recommend?
Supplements, definitely magnesium. There are many forms of magnesium out there. My favorites are magnesium glycinate as well as magnesium malate. Another one I would say is having a whole food vitamin C in your diet. You can get these in capsule form. I wouldn't necessarily recommend ascorbic acid. I would recommend getting it in a whole food form. So like acerola cherry or camu camu, those types of fruits being in this powdered form that are in capsules. I think that can be very supportive in how we can balance the pro-oxidative versus the antioxidant seesaw, more or less. Because if we're having symptoms, clearly there's a lot of oxidative stress happening, and so it'd be a great idea to have a whole food vitamin C to help balance that. Number 3,
maybe vitamin D.
You know, I wouldn't even say vitamin D. I would say really focusing on those fat soluble vitamins, the A, D, E, and K. So I wouldn't just say just supplementing with vitamin D, because if you're taking a D3 supplement, for example, without K2, that can cause calcification. But I think if you're just taking a vitamin D, there are so many processes that the body does to just make vitamin D in its active form. So I think the sun is a great source for vitamin D, and certainly that does change as depending on where you live, the availability from the sun, it does change. But there are vitamin D availability in some food sources, such as salmon, for example. So I think focusing on vitamin A, I think, would be a really big one. And again, that's not taking a synthetic form of vitamin A. That's taking a really good brand of cod liver oil, for example, that has very high vitamin A content, because vitamin A helps our metabolism so much. So you might be quite shocked of how that can support insulin as well. Mm. So I would say probably the two would be the vitamin C and magnesium, and it might be person, like individual after that for the suggestion. Brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I have got another question before we finish this episode. What inspiring message or advice would you like to leave with our viewers and listeners, specifically those struggling with type 2 diabetes?
I would say when we get hit with a diagnosis or kind of this wake-up call, really, of how we were living, I can imagine that it feels quite scary. Of, oh my gosh, I now have this. And it almost is like we develop this anxiety of, oh my gosh, I'm going to die, or I'm going to not be able to live and support my family, or generation after generation. And I can understand how our mind just goes off into these fear-based hypotheses of how our life is going to be now that we have this diagnosis. And I just want to encourage people that we're never alone. I think sometimes because of this heightened sense of feeling unsafe, we can feel very isolated, right? And I want everybody to know that you're never alone. Even if you might be sitting in a room by yourself, you are never, ever alone. There is always opportunity to connect with something higher in whatever you believe in, and to know that you are supported, even if you don't feel like you are right now, because it's almost like, why did this happen to me? I think the more that we can know that we're not alone, and feel that support and feel that trust, and this is our process, the more that we are able to gracefully change into the person that we know we are to be. Because obviously no one wants to get type 2 diabetes. We didn't imagine our life be like that. But it is a hard look in the mirror to say, wow, I need to take some personal responsibility here and how I got here, because I'm an adult right now. And that is a lot of emotional work. That's a lot of changes in the lifestyle. But ultimately, please know that you're never alone in this moment. And you have everything that you need within you to be able to get out of this hole that you might feel that you're in. And there are many other people that you can connect with and feel supported by, not just on this physical level, but again, something higher that you believe in. So just know that you're never alone.
Thank you for sharing your inspiring message. How can people find you if they want to get in touch or learn more about you and what you do?
You can contact me via email. It is discover@fallonmorningstar.com, or Instagram is a great way, @FallonMorningstar. Thank you so much for having me again.
Brilliant. Thank you. First and foremost, I would like to express my sincere gratitude to our amazing guest, Fallon Morningstar, for generously sharing her expertise, insights, and time with us today. Your contribution has truly elevated this episode, and I deeply appreciate the information you have provided. I want also to thank everyone of you, our dedicated viewers and listeners, for for being a part of this episode. If you are looking for additional support and guidance on your health journey, I encourage you to book a discovery call with me at wellnessimpact.org. During this call, we will discuss your personal needs and explore how I can provide a personalized assistance while addressing any issues or questions you may have. If you found today's episode insightful and valuable, I invite you to join our community of people committed to thriving with diabetes. To stay up to date for upcoming episodes, empowering discussions and practical tips, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For those who prefer other platforms such as Spotify, you can follow the Thriving with Diabetes podcast. Once again, thank you, Fallon, for being our guest today. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this impactful journey. Until next time, take care of your health and keep thriving.